The title of this conference by Father John Hardin is The Cross as Charity. Father Hardin, a member of the Society of Jesus, is professor of systematic theology at the Bellarmine School of Theology, Loyola University, Chicago, Illinois. He is author of many books and articles published in the United States, Canada, and Europe. His latest book is Christianity in the 20th Century. Father Hardin is a lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises. He is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin has been a consultant to the consortium from its beginning and is closely associated with its interests as a communication enterprise for religious women in the United States. Father Hardin.
I thought we would take the cross under three aspects, the first of which we will see this evening, and hopefully two tomorrow morning. This evening, then, we want to look at the cross in the practice of Christian charity, as seen in the precept of self-sacrificing love taught by our Savior at the Last Supper. There will then be three scenes, more or less, on which I would ask you to reflect during the coming day. The Last Supper, Christ's agony in the garden, and his crucifixion. Then tomorrow we wish to look at the cross in bearing with our internal struggles and anxieties, exemplified by Christ in his agony. And the cross in accepting misunderstanding, even opposition, which Christ so perfectly showed us in his crucifixion. As was briefly indicated in the little road map that I thought might be of some service before the retreat, the cross can be taken, and in fact is so taken, in all Indo-European languages, and as I have come to learn, the Oriental languages, though not rooted in Christian culture, have adopted the same meaning. The cross is both a substantive and a verb. As Christianity understands it, it may be described as meaningful suffering. Or, if you wish, suffering with a purpose. Because the only problem of evil with which all the great minds of history have struggled is not with whether there is evil, too obvious, too painfully evident. The only question that human genius has asked, and no human genius can answer, is why? Why evil? Why suffering? Why pain? The fact, from the moment we leave our mother's womb and cry till the last pang before we die, life has too much pain to be none observed or recognized. The whole question is, why, good God, why? And this is where Christianity, in the person of Christ, doesn't answer it in terms of human logic, answers it in the person of God, who became man mainly to teach us not to understand suffering, but to live it. And when the time comes, to die it with a purpose. We want then to look at the subject of the cross of Christian charity. And our context is that long discourse that our Savior gave at the Last Supper, which, as you know, contains many mysteries of our faith. But for our purpose, especially this one. Yet as with so many of the great mysteries of the Christian religion, it is quite important, and in this case indispensable, to see it against the backdrop of God's revelation before he became man. There are many purposes to studying the old law. Here is one. By way of contrast, to see the development, the growth, in God's communicating of himself to the world, until finally in human flesh, he dwelt among us. What do we find in the old law on the subject of love? We won't spend too much time here, but just enough so that we shall hopefully be better able to appreciate the meaning of Christian charity. As I must have told more than once to this audience, keep telling my students, in the last analysis, this side of the beatific vision, the only understanding we have of anything is by way of contrast. If I wrote these notes with white ink on what happens to be white paper, well, they could be the same notes. I couldn't read them. What is the notion of love in the old law? And anyone who underestimates the old covenant by saying that it is the covenant of law just has not read the Old Testament. In some of the most dramatic passages of the Old Testament is the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. This we know is a very high ethic, which Christ, at least on one solemn occasion, in the Gospel of Matthew, as recording the episode, remember of the rich young man, then on another occasion, in other words, Christ approved, as well he might, the loving of neighbor as one loves oneself, as a high demand on man's generosity. But what does it mean before we get into Christian charity? Otherwise, we are liable to miss the profound meaning of what the new covenant is. What's new about it? It means this Mosaic law of loving one's neighbor, that we are to love others, and here's the operative word, as we love ourselves. I keep saying because I'm so conscious of it. It's the adverbs that bring out the rich nuances, in this case of God's revelation. So we are to love others. How? and we love ourselves. So that what is the norm given to us by revelation up to the time of Christ, and indeed approved also by the Savior, the norm is self-love. Do we love ourselves? We sure do. When did we start loving ourselves? Rather early. How often do we love ourselves? Often. We never pause. It's an unfailing love. It is always excusing what this self does. And you'd think after having lived with ourselves so long, knowing so many nasty things about this ego, you'd think we'd give up. Talk about perseverance. Dogged perseverance. I suppose the easiest list we'd ever have to draw up is what I like. Depending on the audience, you don't know where people would start. I'm sure some people would start with, I like hot dogs. All right, a good start. But the list would be very easy to draw up. We like to have, I don't say people talk to us. We like that too. Or even just think well of us. We are quite satisfied to have people just think of us. And during my pleasant year as chaplain at the Grafton Prison Farm, I discovered not a few of those criminals got into jail because they just like to have people think about them. So, that's the norm. Isn't it remarkable that an adjective like thoughtful needs no further commentary? We know it can't mean that a thoughtful person is full of thought about himself. That's a definition of sanity. A thoughtful person is one who, well, thinks about others. So we can go on down the line. We don't want to dwell here too much. First, not to underestimate the high demands. And they are pretty high. So high, indeed, they go beyond the Decalogue, of course, that the laws of all civilized nations are quite satisfied, to pass precepts, sometimes binding under heavy penalties, telling people not to love others as they love themselves. That would be a new law for the Ohio statutes. Quite satisfied not to hurt people. Don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. So much then for the altruism of the old law had to be revealed, and as we know, not easy to practice. Just try out of 17 hours of a waking day, depending on your sleeping habits, just try to say for 2 hours not to think about yourself. And sisters, I promise you, a very difficult internal mortification. But And it's at this point that Christianity is new. At the Last Supper, and let's reread that context. At the Last Supper, our Savior said he was giving us a new commandment. Watch it. It's new, but this is a commandment. No less than the commandment of the Mosaic Law. He further emphasized that it was his special, unique mandate. And then he added, and as we look around the world today, the Christian world, no wonder there are so many people who are not drawn to Christianity. Because, he said, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, which by implication means, if you don't do this, people will not recognize you as mine. Maybe I've told this episode before, it's worth repeating. Have you heard about Madeline Murray, the woman atheist? Well, as you know, Jesuits cavort with the strangest people. We invited Madeline to visit our Theologate a couple of years ago at North Aurora. We picked her up and promised to bring her back. She had a television engagement in Chicago. Well, we wanted to have this behind closed doors, faculty only. So there was Madeline sitting on the rostrum and for about 15 minutes explaining her particular brand of atheism. A very clever woman. Then we began to ply her with questions. I asked her, Mrs. Murray, she interrupted me, call me Madeline. Okay, Madeline. In my years of study and my experience, I've met all kinds of atheists, but I can't just quite categorize you. What brand are you? I'll never forget what she said. I'm the kind of an atheist that you Christians have produced by not practicing Christianity. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples. Now let us analyze what Christ meant. We'll get homiletic before this conference is over. I keep reminding myself, this is a retreat. Yet, what did our Savior mean? He said it was a new commandment. What's new about it? What is new is the norm, the standard, the gauge, the model for loving others. What is the highest ethic of the old law under divine grace revealed? The norm is self. The standard is self-love. And as we painfully know, it is not an easy altruism to put into practice. What's the new norm? Christ's. Love one another as I have been loving you. So now the norm of loving others is not merely self-love, which is plenty. It is not, in other words, our love, which I've got three little lines underneath, our. It is not our love of us, but Christ's love of us. What is higher about this Christian practice of charity? The whole panorama of Christ's love for us opens up. Because we are being given as the standard of the way we should love others, as He became man, God, to teach us. First, in general, then we descend to particulars. We would expect it to be more selfless. You might say, and I'm coining words, and when I do, I never quite make sure whether they're going to ring. You might say that the altruism of the old law is a self-full love, where self is the standard by which I measure my love of others, whereas the ethic of Christ is a selfless love. It is secondly more generous, because, as we know, in spite of how much we love ourselves, we don't always love ourselves as we should, right? As much as we could, right? And at best, the lover in this case, even though the object is us, the lover is still only we. As we get closer to analyzing what this Christian charity practiced by Christ and precepted, notice, prescribed by Christ means, we see that it means especially, and we are now analyzing this selflessness, it means especially as Christ so tragically proved, practicing a love which loves in spite of resistance to being loved. Is that something new? Well, kinda, because, frankly, we don't resist our own self-love. Am I being clear? If you can imagine a schizophrenic person, just for the sake of exemplification, one part loving, the other part resisting, you get some idea of what this loving in spite of resistance to being loved means. What are some examples of this resistance? You can add others. Indifference. We are to love people in spite of the fact that they are quite and quite obviously indifferent to whether we love them or not. I'm sure I use this illustration, and very likely in an audience speaking to you, it's like kissing a brick. Nothing happens. Except the brick gets wet. No response. Being a teacher, now the figure was a little strong, But teaching some classes, honestly, is like kissing bricks. The big lug that came to me after a really well-prepared class of ancient history that I taught in first year teaching in Cincinnati. Great big hulk. What are we studying this old stuff for anyhow? Here I pour myself out. Well, I didn't know. Shortly after coming back from Europe for my studies, I got myself a pleasant summer job as chaplain at a home for retarded girls. I should add there's another big home for retarded boys. Run by a religious community where the sisters told me more than once, a wonderful apostolate, but the really hard part of their apostolate is that these girls, being, that's the way they screen them, being retarded, were not responsive. Even, one sister told me, I even appreciate when they get angry. So loving others in spite of indifference. Surely, a description of God's love of man. Again, loving others in spite of resistance to being loved, where the resistance is ingratitude. Lack of appreciation. Now, this is a little more than the first. In the first case, it's you're dealing with a brick or an iceberg. In this case, it's ingratitude.
This conference is continued on Side B.